Welcome to episode number 8 of the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, where Christina and I talk all about NEAT, otherwise known as non-exercise activity thermogenesis. We start the episode by talking about whether it's actually possible to break or damage your metabolism. We break down the components of energy expenditure and give you guys practical applications about NEAT, how to track it, apply it to your journeys, and use it to your benefit. As always, if you like the podcast and you want to support it, all we ask is that you share this episode with a friend, family member, or coworker who would benefit from it. One share can go a really long way and supports our mission to help as many people as possible to live a healthier, sustainable lifestyle. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how this podcast moves up the ranks and becomes accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode, number 8, all about NEAT.
Hi, and welcome back to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to discuss all things NEAT. So NEAT stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So this is something that Marissa and I talk a lot about with our clients, and it's something that we have come to learn as athletes ourselves. So we're going to get all into kind of what NEAT is, components of TDEE, why you should think about NEAT and incorporate that into your lifestyle, maybe how much NEAT you should be doing, and all of these good things. But before we get into that, just little housekeeping things, something super exciting that Marissa did this weekend. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so this is actually kind of relevant to the discussion of NEAT in general. I moved this weekend, so moved into a new condo. It is twice the square footage of what I was living in before, so going from like 550 square feet to about 900 now. So not exactly twice, but it feels like three times the space. So that was my weekend. We're recording right now on Tuesday. The moving process started on Saturday, excluding packing up my entire condo, like the entire week leading up to it. But it's actually super relevant because my NEAT was super freaking high throughout the whole weekend. So we moved on Saturday. We did hire movers to get all the stuff out and bring it to the new place. But outside of that, unpacking everything, going to IKEA, buying a ton of new furniture, and then dragging that up the staircase, because we do have one staircase going into the condo, and then building all that out. I was up until 3:30 a.m. on Saturday, and then I was up until 2 a.m. on Sunday. And then last night I stayed up till like 1, but like that's just because I knew I wouldn't be able to fall asleep any earlier. So I'm slowly getting back to like somewhat normal of a schedule. But yeah, I was just wired, and I was just going and going and going. And by the end of the day, Saturday, and we'll talk about how NEAT can be quantified by step count. But
I think before, just really quickly, just in case, so I know I just said like NEAT is non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So just for anyone, like Marissa, you were just like, my NEAT was through the roof. So that is basically all the activity you do outside of exercise. So just like walking around, like she said, like moving boxes, walking up and down the stairs. So it's not like you go to the gym, you work out, you get in your workout, or you're doing 30 minutes of cardio. It's just everything you do, from like moving your hands, like fidgeting, just all movement that's not like specifically exercise based. So yeah. Just to clear that up real quick.
That's a good interjection, because that can definitely confuse some people.
Yes.
But yeah, so typically one way that we like to quantify NEAT and put a number to it as coaches is with a step count. And while that's not always the most accurate, you know, there's research to show that it can be off by a certain amount, that's fine. But it gives us a nice ballpark of like, okay, what was your daily activity roughly like with that step count? And obviously that doesn't take into account if you're twitching at your seat when you're working or whatnot, but it gives you a good baseline. And so my step count on Saturday was like 18,000 steps.
Oh my goodness.
Which for me is like very, very hard to do. And then I believe Sunday was something like 13 or 14,000. Yesterday, I definitely passed 10. And today, I think it'll be a little more normal, but I did just spend an hour like running up and down my stairs at my old apartment, clearing out the rest of the stuff. So yeah, it's just been a neat packed weekend. So super relevant to talk about today.
Yeah. So something that Marissa and I were talking about this morning was ironically, I was out on a walk with my dog because I was trying to get some steps in for the day before I got busy with everything. But I was talking with Marissa because I feel like we chat 24/7 throughout the day. And we were discussing part of my reverse diet because I'm now, again, it's December. So when this comes out, it'll probably be January. But as of today, I'm 4.5 weeks post show. And we were comparing my pictures from one day out to this morning and how I'm up 3-ish pounds from stage weight. And just the biggest difference between this reverse and my last reverse. So my last reverse, I put on 10 pounds in 2 weeks and didn't ever come back down. So normally, like sometimes people will go out to eat and they put on a little bit of water weight and they'll take that right off. But that did not happen for me. So one of the things that we were talking about was a big difference between that reverse and this reverse is I'm actually doing my cardio with intent. So I'm not just kind of getting on and not really doing everything mindlessly. So I'm still having intent with my cardio sessions and I'm prioritizing NEAT. So we'll kind of talk about everything that goes into it. And I think it's just because everything that I've learned throughout the years and how I know how to implement NEAT and how to track it. And also just knowing the importance of NEAT and how that plays into your overall caloric expenditure. So I think that's actually a good segue to talk about kind of what goes into your total daily energy expenditure or your TDEE. So we had something that we were going to talk about before this, but I don't know. I think this makes sense right now.
Yeah. So basically your total daily energy expenditure, that's a fancy way to say your metabolism and like what everything that comprises your entire metabolism of what your expenditure is. So that is your TDEE. And it's broken up into four components. So it's broken up into your basal metabolic rate. Sometimes it's also termed resting metabolic rate. There's a small difference between the two, but like for the purposes of this podcast, let's call it BMR, basal metabolic rate. That is if you are going to lay down, not move a single muscle, and just be basically awake, but as close to sleeping as possible, essentially. And so you're not moving. And how many calories you would burn if you did that for 24 hours is your BMR. And your resting metabolic rate is similar, but you might just be like sitting up instead of laying down, but they can be measured in different ways. But essentially, you know, resting, not moving, how many calories you would burn per day. So that's going to be, for women, it typically ranges around like 1,100 to 1,500 calories, depending on how much they weigh. For men, it's roughly, you know, a little bit higher than that just because they have higher body masses. So roughly 1,500 to 2,000 calories, depending on the body size. Then you have the TEF, which is the thermic effect of food.
Do you want to talk about, or I don't know if you want to talk about how great of a percentage that goes into your total daily energy expenditure? Or maybe do it afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it can be roughly 60 to 70% of your total metabolism, just depending on how much those other things are contributing. Mm-hmm. So it is the largest portion. I think that's a good point to make, is it is the largest portion of your total daily energy expenditure is your BMR. And you can't really change that unless you change your body weight drastically. TEF is the thermic effect of food. This is typically the smallest percentage. So it can be like roughly 5%, maybe up to 10 if you're eating a lot of foods with a high thermic effect content.
Like protein.
Yeah, protein or fibrous vegetables. So the thermic effect of food is the amount of calories that it actually takes to digest your food, because it takes energy to digest food. So protein has the highest thermic effect of food. Roughly 30 to 40% of the calories that you consume in protein are actually being burned by digesting it. So it has a very high thermic effect. And then carbs and fats have a lower thermic effect of food, but fibrous carbs, of course, because they take a little bit more energy to digest and they keep you fuller for longer, those have a higher thermic effect than, say, simple carbs like a cereal. So that is thermic effect of food. I don't know a lot about the nitty-gritty science behind it, but that's the gist of it. And we can change that by changing the composition of our diet. So more fruits and vegetables, more protein dense foods, that's going to essentially raise the amount of calories that you're burning from digesting food, but it's not really ever something that's going to be a game changer or super significant in like your actual progress, because it is like that 5%.
And the thermic effect of food will change when you're dieting, only because you typically are eating less. So the less you eat, the lower of a percentage that will kind of contribute to. But again, it doesn't really change a whole lot.
Yeah. Christina, do you want to go through the next two?
Yeah, sure. So the next one is all of the expenditure that comes from activity. So that will be like exercise. So going to the gym, getting in a workout, training, or doing cardio. So this, I think a lot of people kind of get wrong with the percentages. They think that has a much, much higher effect on how many calories you burn throughout the day than you actually do. So some people, and this has been our mistake that we have made in the past, is it can be anywhere from 10 to 15%. And I think a lot of people think maybe like 30, 40, maybe even 50, or they think that it's even upwards of like 70%. So they will go to the gym and they'll get a session in, and it could be even like a really hard, intense session, and same thing with cardio, but then they come home and sloth the rest of the day because they think that, well, I got my training session in. So, I'm wiped. I don't need to do anything else. So I think to me, when I first was introduced to NEAT and I started looking into the components of how everything that you burn throughout the day, I thought that your basal metabolic rate or your resting metabolic rate would be a lot lower. So I was very, very surprised when I first started, getting introduced to all of this. So the next component is NEAT. So what we talked about before, just everything that you do outside of exercise, but it's still activity. So if you're watching the YouTube video right now, you might see Marissa and I move our hands, or we're fidgeting, we're moving around, and that actually does contribute to how many calories you burn throughout the day. And I think what is very important to discuss when talking about the components is your NEAT can have the biggest fluctuations between those four components. So that's why it actually is something to really pay attention to and something to kind of keep in your back pocket when it comes to dieting strategies, or just trying to be a healthy individual overall. So something that Marissa and I do, and something that we do for ourselves, is we have a step count, because like she was mentioning, that's a really easy way to kind of keep track of your movement throughout the day and making sure that you're hitting a specific goal every single day, because it is very easy to sloth and to sit around your house and not move if you're not cognizant of it, if you're not thinking about it and you don't have a goal throughout the day. Is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say with the exercise expenditure, so the abbreviation for that we might use is EE, but we're probably just going to call it exercise. One of the things is, our smartwatches tell us that we're burning 1500 calories doing a leg mm-hmm. workout. And so we're like, oh, those are the 1500 calories that I burned today. And so some people will even quantify, I've seen people before, and this is super bad, only eating the amount of calories that they burn and mm-hmm. assuming that BMR doesn't exist, because the only calories that are relevant are the ones that the treadmill says or the ones that the watch say. And I'm sure we could talk more about that, the watches and fitness trackers in general, a little bit later. But the misconceptions there are huge. in addition to the misconceptions, and this was what I was going to talk about first, about your metabolism in general. And a lot of times when I get client inquiries and I'm talking with them on a Zoom or on the phone, and, you know, most people who are inquiring with a coach have tried some kind of diet before. And a lot of times it works. A lot of times I get people who have lost a significant amount of weight and they're coming to me for that last bit that they can't get off, or maybe they have yo-yoed back and forth between dieting and regaining and dieting and regaining. And when these people come to me, they say, you know, okay, well, I crash dieted and I heard that that can like break your metabolism or like ruin my metabolism. Like, is that a thing? Or like, you know, is this an irreversible thing that I've like done to myself, this metabolic damage? And that was actually a term.
Just thinking about that with Lane Norton.
Yeah, because that was a term back in like 2014, 2015. That was a thing that was kind of coined, I believe, by Lane Norton, like you said. And he used the term damage, and that was quickly kind of edited and reverted to the term adaptation, because you can acutely, quote unquote, damage your metabolism, but nothing that you do to your metabolism is going to be that permanent, because your metabolism is adaptable in every direction, and it's going to adapt to how you treat it and the fuel sources that you give it and what you do day to day. And so as we'll get into this, if you are someone who has worried about, you know, did I break my metabolism doing X, Y, and Z crash diet? Like, I can almost 100% assure you that you did not break your metabolism. There's probably a lot that you can do, especially with meat, to kind of reverse those effects and get yourself back on track. And maybe if, you know, tracking calories or tracking macros is all you're doing, looking at this variable can start to turn that around. So just wanted to bust that myth really quickly.
So I think it's really important. And this is one of the things that we talk about with reverse dieting and why that's so important, because what your body does, whether it's in a, I guess at all times, what it's trying to do is just kind of make sure you're at homeostasis. So it's trying to say, okay, we're getting X amount of calories and we are burning X amount of calories. So this is how efficient I need to be to keep everything at a baseline. So when you're dieting and you're at your whatever intake you are and you reduce your intake, your body goes, okay, well, we have to do everything that we were doing before, but now we have to be more efficient because we're getting less calories. And so what it does is it kind of down regulates. So that's what happens is your BMR and everything, it kind of, and actually your NEAT too, is everything kind of starts to slow down. And so the more you diet, so if you're a chronic dieter and you have a big history of dieting in the past, and maybe you've just gone through a big dieting phase, then there is a huge chance that your metabolism is going to be very low. But that doesn't mean that you can't improve it. And that doesn't mean that you can take steps to get back to having a higher metabolism. So what your body has just done is it's kind of fought you throughout this dieting process. And because it doesn't want to necessarily lose weight, it doesn't want to adapt. But what I think is really, really important for people out there to know is this is a normal response to dieting, that you are not weird, you're not broken, you don't have a damaged metabolism. It's just lower. So you just need to take more steps and be careful, you know, with fat regain, but also just trying to build your metabolism back up. So having a coach or having someone in your corner or just being aware of these things can really help you in the future to kind of get back to a more normal state.
Yes. And I did want to kind of elaborate on that, on the point of metabolic adaptation. So getting more into the weeds of what metabolic adaptation is, how it presents itself, and how we can kind of see that happening. And then we can go into how do we actually build up our metabolism once it has adapted. So metabolic adaptation, some of the more recent research has shown that the degree to which your BMR actually downregulates isn't as much as we thought it was. So someone who has a basal metabolic rate or, you know, in a research study, they're doing things on a group level. So the average basal metabolic rate of this group of women was 1300 calories, let's say. hypothetical number, right? Typically what happens when a group of people go through a diet, their basal metabolic rate really doesn't go down by that much, maybe 75 calories per day, maybe 50, but there's not really a ton of adaptation happening there that's super, super significant. So you're not going to see someone's metabolic rate, basal metabolic rate, going from 1400 to 700 over the course of a diet. That doesn't happen. The changes that our metabolism makes, things like amenorrhea, losing our menstrual cycle, immune function kind of going down, those things happen, but they don't really comprise as much energy as we once thought, which brings me to the most important point here, and the topic of this whole conversation is the change in your total metabolic rate throughout the day is most greatly comprised by your NEAT. Like Christina said, there's the most fluctuation in your NEAT from day to day, depending on if you're dieting, if you're in a calorie deficit or not. And those changes will, quote unquote, slow down your metabolism a lot more than any uncontrollable changes in your BMR. And I think the most important takeaway from this is the control aspect. We have control over our expenditure. And so we can't just chalk it up to, oh, well, I'm dieting, so my metabolism is slow and there's nothing I can do about that. We have control. We just have to be very mindful and keep account of that need.
Because that's the, I guess maybe that's what we used to think when we were competing. And it's just, oh, well, I have a shit metabolism. And it doesn't matter how much cardio I do, how low of food I eat. I'm just never, you know, I'm never going to lose that last 5 to 10 pounds. But it's because, you know, Marissa has alluded to this before. It's like, well, she'd go to the gym, do her cardio, and then sit.
And I come home and I would slog and hard.
And not move. And so it really wasn't until I got a tracker where I was able to see, I mean, like even over the summer during quarantine, when we didn't have access to a gym, I'd go on these like hour long walk with my dog and I'd come back and be like, I'm only at 4,000 steps. Like, are you kidding me? And so tracking my NEAT was a way for me to be like, wow, okay, I just went on this hour long walk and I would have assumed I got like 10,000 steps, but it's really not that high. So when we go into tracking and in establishing your baseline, I just think it's a really good idea. The same way that we go into tracking macros, it's just a good idea to see what kind of activity equates to how much meat you're getting. Because once you start to get a little bit more into baselines, if you go on a 30-minute walk, okay, roughly that's 3,000 steps. So it just plays into having that experience moving forward and knowing what you need to do in order to get the steps or reach the neat level that you want for that day.
Yeah. And that was super tough when the seasons changed for me. So basically during the summer and through the fall, I would go on pretty much 30 minutes of walking outside each day. And then my time at the gym typically would comprise my step goal for the day. Full disclosure, it was like try to get 7,000 minimum is like my day to day. And if I do that, then I do a pretty good job of just maintaining my weight and keeping that variable constant. And then when the seasons changed, it just started getting, of course, a lot colder towards the more recent months. And all of a sudden, it became very, very hard to hit that goal. And so I found myself pacing my house more. I found myself getting on the treadmill and walking a little bit more when I got to the gym to warm up or to cool down. And those are ways that I kind of have gone about it, but it's so much easier to have a day where I just don't go outside because it's freezing outside. And so that's really tough to keep constant throughout a different season. And I guess we could talk about, you know, how we can maybe change that or change the goal slightly just to make it more realistic. But before we get into that, did you want to talk about how to improve metabolic rate?
Yeah. So I think part of having that higher metabolic rate is we talk about reverse dieting. So if you are a chronic dieter, or maybe you're not, and you just want to improve your metabolic rate, well, going into a reverse dieting phase, slowly incorporating more food, that's a really good way to bring your metabolism up. And what's really important is just having overall more lean tissue or having more muscle. So I like to talk with clients, and especially my female clients, is why muscle is so important is if you were to clone yourself, but one person, like one of your clones, one of you has more muscle than the other person. If you're sitting down on the couch watching a movie, well, the person with more muscle is just going to burn more calories overall. So they can eat more food because muscle is not, it's not efficient for your body to have because it actually requires more food to maintain that muscle mass. So that's why you're able to eat more. And it's just overall, I mean, that's what we want. We want to have a better body composition and we want to be able to eat more food. So muscle is awesome. but having more muscle mass and eating more food, that can help improve your metabolic rate, but also again, just increasing your NEAT. But I think we'll go into, well, if NEAT is so good, well, then maybe I should just have higher and higher NEAT. Maybe I should just do more and more and more. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I think it's important to first discuss why we want to do NEAT. So of course, having that metabolic rate, but NEAT is just, it's just a healthy habit to do. So just being an active individual is just overall just very good for you. And it also helps with digestion. So maybe going on a 10-minute walk after your meal can help with digestion. You don't really feel like everything is just sitting in your stomach. But so those are some of the things that I thought of when coming up with why NEAT is important to incorporate.
Yeah. And also just statistically and with epidemiology, there is a much, much lower rate of developing obesity and other comorbidities like mm-hmm. cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes. All of that stuff, the risk drops off at about a step count, average daily step count of 4,000 to 5,000 steps. There are actually a few studies kind of correlating, and of course, correlation does not equal causation, but there is a very strong correlation between an average daily step count of 4,000 or 5,000 or more with a lower risk of those things. And it just goes into the conversation of the bigger conversation of our country of we have an obesity epidemic. And a lot of that is attributed in part to a very sedentary lifestyle. What happens when you have a very sedentary lifestyle? Your step count is really low because you're not moving. And so mm-hmm. I will tell you right now, if I were to get up, make a coffee, work from 8 to 4 and not go to the gym and just hang out at home, I would be at 2,000 or 3,000 steps for the day. I can tell you right now that if I got up, and a lot of times this does happen, especially now that it's colder, I will get up, I will work all day from home. And then by the time it's 4 p.m. and I'm getting ready for the gym, I've accrued maybe 500 steps for the whole day. And so we have to be very intentional about this. And, it can lead to just making it easier to gain weight if we're not, compensating with expenditure and we're not being mindful of getting in some activity. And again, like Christina said, it's promoting a healthier lifestyle. It's promoting getting up and moving around. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to be doing these crazy HIIT circuit FITSPO workouts to be seeing good progress. We just have to move. We just have to walk. And when we simplify it down to something as simple as, hey, I have a client who just signed on who's 250 pounds and they're morbidly obese and they're, nervous to start their journey. Okay, well, let's just have you go on a 30-minute walk every day. And like that can be so powerful because it just lowers the barrier to fitness and to living a healthier lifestyle too. Mm-hmm.
And not having to have access to a gym if you don't want to do that. But yeah, I think it's so important. And I feel like also too, when you're cognizant of your need, you just, I feel like you're more productive. Like your house is cleaner. Maybe your garden looks a lot better. It's just because you're moving. So that's why it's really important to incorporate NEAT into your healthy lifestyle. So I think that brings us into the next question or the next topic of, okay, so I know meat is important and I know that I should be doing it if I want to be healthy and have a higher metabolism. So how much meat should I be doing? And this is really based off of each individual and their lifestyle, because if I have a client who's a nurse and they're on their feet all day, that's going to look a lot different than someone who has maybe an hour commute one way, who sits on their computer. Things are going to look a lot different. So it's going to be based off of each individual. So you heard Marissa say that her step count or her NEAT that she aims for is 7,000, but that's not a magical number. It's not something that you think, okay, well, I need to do that now because Marissa does it. It is something that you just need to figure out, maybe get an idea of what your baseline is, because if your baseline is a couple thousand steps and you jump right to 7,000, well, that's a huge, huge, huge jump. So it's the same kind of concept that we have with new clients tracking their macros. You know, throw on a fitness watch, get an Apple Watch or a Fitbit, or maybe even just take your phone, because most phones nowadays have step counts or step trackers, and just take it with you and get an idea of how many steps you typically get in a week. And some days will vary. You know, some days, you go to the gym, and maybe when you're training, you're walking around from machine to machine, and you tend to get a little bit more steps than on a rest day. And so I like to take a weekly average rather than a daily. I think you should have a specific number that you try to attain every day. But I think the biggest thing is just your weekly average. Because again, some days you're going to be running errands, have a lot more to do, and maybe your step counts at 10,000 versus a rest day when it's 3,000. But it is a good idea to have just kind of like something that you aim to hit every single day. So if you are someone, you've been tracking your steps, and let's say you're getting 2,000 to 3,000, well, then maybe a goal should be 4,000. And again, just the same way that we would adjust check-ins and adjust macros, well, we might adjust, as a coach, we might adjust your step count for the day. But I don't think that you should be doing anything too drastic, because again, we get into that sustainability component. And if kind of your baseline is 2,000 to 3,000, 10,000 is going to be a huge change for you. And if you do something like that right off the bat, you may feel like, hey, this isn't for me, I can't do this, and you just don't do anything at all. So I think that's why it's really important to base things off of you rather than a number that you've heard someone else try to obtain.
Yeah. And with that, the whole culture of that 10,000 step per day goal, I don't even know where that came from, probably from one of the fitness apps that has a watch that it sponsors. But anyways, that's a big prevalent thing, is, oh, should I get 10,000 steps per day? The fact that that is the culture and that is what is perpetuated is not a bad thing, because getting more steps, like we've talked about, getting more movement in promotes a healthier lifestyle. But I will say that, you know, it's not going to be realistic for the individual that does live a sedentary lifestyle overall. So if you are someone who is averaging, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 steps on a day-to-day basis, because now you work from home with the pandemic, and now, you know, you are just sitting on your computer all day, and that's the nature of your job, and maybe you train 2 to 4 times per week, you know, you're not going to be getting 10,000 steps per day without really, really trying hard for it. And so it's like Christina said, it's very important that we don't just try to accommodate to these social norms and say, okay, well, 10,000 is what my Apple Watch says is a good goal, so I'm gonna go for 10,000, because you might be able to do that for a month or 2 months or 3 months or something like that. But then what happens when the seasons change, or what happens when you change jobs? You know, we have to pick something that is, one, relative to you, and also that fits your lifestyle and your ability to actually accommodate to that. So, you know, it's one thing to have an attainable step goal that maybe you need to do a certain amount of walking to get to, but what is sustainable for you? And I think we have touched on that a lot, but when we're setting this goal, the goal with NEAT is not to get our expenditure to a certain amount. It's to stay in a healthy range, right? And to keep a variable constant. And I think I don't want to get too confused with like, oh yes, let's manipulate meat to change our metabolism, because yes, we can do that. And that is a tool that we can use when we're dieting. But for the most part, and for most populations, this is just something that we want to keep kind of constant and keep steady. So if for you, if you're really sedentary, maybe a great goal for you is just 5,000 steps per day. Mm-hmm. And keep that constant 365 days a year, or 52 weeks of the year, keep that average around 5,000. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it might be a little bit higher and sometimes it might be a little bit lower, but it's something that you can pretty easily do without too much strain on your life. Mm-hmm. That now you know that if you're gaining weight or losing weight, that is not a variable that you have to do something about, because it's constant. And mm-hmm. that is something I think is really powerful. That yes, we can use it as a tool to manipulate things, but also it can be very helpful to just take a moving variable out of the equation when we are trying to reach a certain goal.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's really important. And we go back to that baseline. So if you like, so continuing off of that example, if you are getting 5,000 steps, but you have this idea that, okay, well, more is better. So I'm going to go to 6,000. And then the next week I'm going to do 7,000. And then let's see if I can do 8, 10. And then eventually you get to the point where you're doing 15,000 steps. That's, you have to be very, very intentional. And that's pretty difficult. If you have a lot of things going on in your life, you're going to be going on a lot of walks. You're going to be having to, you know, I need to get up and move. You know, my Apple Watch is reminding me to get up and move around. But if your new average is 15,000, again, your body is going to adapt to that level of activity. So you now have to keep up with 15,000 steps a day if you want to continue on with your food intake and kind of maintain. So that can, it might be a good thing because maybe now you're able to eat more, but then what happens when life happens and you're not able to go on all those walks anymore? Then, you know, your NEAT is going to decrease. And if you continue with that intake, you might gain a little bit of weight. And so again, when we talk about this, that sustainability, component, like 5,000 is a decent range. You shouldn't feel bad if someone else is getting 10 or someone else is getting 15, because there are people who are nurses, there are people who are personal trainers, maybe they work construction, they're on their feet all day, and that is their norm. So again, I think that's why it's really important to not compare your numbers to someone else's and think about, you know, when you're dieting or when you're working out and you're exercising, is this something I feel like I can do the rest of my life? Is this something that I feel like is good for my daily level of activity? And just keeping yourself sane, because if you're constantly all day stressing, I need to get my steps, you know, that's probably not healthy if you're constantly obsessing over that number.
Yeah. And I think it's very important, that point that you made about not comparing numbers from person to person. I think that's something that's kind of thrown around a lot in the fitness industry with regards to diet, mm-hmm. but this plays into that a lot, because if you see someone, you know, who's the same height and weight as you, and they're eating, you know, let's say it's a 5'2" female, petite female, right? And that person, one of them is eating 2,500 calories per day, and she's got the best body composition, and she's flaunting it all over Instagram. And then there's another 5'2" individual who's only able to eat maybe 1,700 calories per day because of her lifestyle. And so NEAT plays into this, because maybe that person eating 2,600 calories is like an Orange Theory coach, or like, mm-hmm. You know, works construction or is on their feet all day long. So of course they're going to be able to eat more. But they also probably have to have the hyper awareness that if they have a day off, or if they have a day that where they're really just not moving at all, or they do change their job to something that's work from home, they have to have that hyper awareness of, okay, now I can't continue eating like this, because that's going to change things. And one other point that I really wanted to bring up is, let's say you did want to increase your step count a bunch. You know, you wanted to go from 8,000 steps per day to 15,000 steps per day because you want to be that person. You want to be that person who eats 2,500 calories or 3,000 calories per day. and maintains their weight. You want to be able to flaunt that on Instagram, right? So if that is something that you're going to do, again, you need to have that hyper awareness of, if I change my activity back down, I need to have the awareness to also change my diet. So these things go hand in hand, because mm-hmm. like we said, meat is the largest controllable component of our metabolism. And so we can manipulate things if we really want to, but we have to be aware that our diet goes right along with that. And that is, mm-hmm. I have this problem a lot with collegiate athletes, because they'll come off of their 4 years and they will immediately gain a bunch of weight once they start their 9 to 5. And they're like, well, I just kept eating the way that I was eating when I was practicing 6 days a week for 3 hours a day. I'm like, yeah, you see how that can be an issue. You didn't adjust your nutrition to match. So that is kind of how those two things really do go hand in hand. And I wanted to make sure that was something that we touched on.
Yeah. So, and the other thing I wanted to build on was, you were talking about how your meat should be relatively stable day to day and kind of kept very constant. So we did talk about though, so meat is a variable that I paid attention to during my prep, and it's something that I'm paying attention to in my reverse diet. So when I was prepping, I did manipulate my meat. So I went from whatever my average was to trying to increase week to week, or maybe, you know, it's not something that we actually change week to week, but something, okay, well, instead of, 5,000, I want you hitting 8. Okay. Instead of 8, I want you hitting 10. Instead of 8, I want you hitting 12. But something to keep in mind is, once that number hit 10, once that number hit 12, that was my new baseline. So I had to continue hitting that number every single day, or really focusing on that weekly average, but it couldn't drop down below that because my food and my activity levels were evolving around my need. So that became my new baseline. So I think that's something, you know, it's not just, okay, 1 week I hit 10. Well, now I'm going to go back to 5. That if you have a new number, you kind of have to taper in the same way that you would food. So that what I was trying to hit in prep, I am no longer trying to hit. So along with my cardio that's being prescribed, my NEAT is decreasing as well, but it is still something that I'm tracking of. So it's not like, okay, I was at, you know, 15,000 steps during prep. I'm now going to hit 5 again, because that's my normal. It's like, well, no, I still need to pay attention and I still need to taper it down a little bit. So just in the way that we manipulate food, sometimes meat is manipulated as well. But kind of once you get back into your normal, then that it can be a little bit more constant and not changing quite as much.
Yes. And I wanted to add on kind of just the nature of how our metabolism adapts, because we talk about, you know, hey, you change this, it becomes your new baseline. I don't want to put out the idea that your metabolism adapts like this, because that's how you see progress. So let's say you're maintaining your weight with 7,000 steps per day and a consistent calorie intake, but then you increase to 10,000 steps per day for the next 2 weeks. The time period for which that works, you know, if that's 2 weeks, if that's a month of you now losing weight because you have changed your activity levels, then that is the period in which your metabolism is still adapting to that new level, right? So you might be able to go, if you make a drastic change, like maybe even 5,000 to 10,000 steps, you might be able to ride that out for a good month of weight loss, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you get to the point where you are now maintaining that weight loss, but no longer making any further progress, that's when, okay, that 10,000 is now your baseline, because you cannot progress further unless you make another change to something. Mm-hmm. So I did want to just touch on the gradual nature. And so this is why when we make changes with our diet for reverse dieting or dieting down, we are making changes to our diet and to our cardio and activity levels gradually over time, mm-hmm. right? Whether in either direction. And so it's because there's that lag of, like, our metabolism doesn't adapt super quick. So if we make a change, we can ride that out for a little bit. And then once we reach that new baseline, that new adaptation and homeostasis, then we make another change to continue to see progress in one direction or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. So to kind of jump on into the next topic is, okay, so we know what NEAT is. I have an idea of maybe how much NEAT I should be getting. Well, how can I get some more NEAT? So we talked about things before, you know, you can go on walks, take your dog on a walk. Maybe you park far away or you take the stairs instead of an elevator. So you're just kind of being more intentional of like, I should get up and move a little bit more. So we've talked about this before, like when you're in prep, if you're in prep or maybe you're dieting, again, sometimes you downregulate and your body is telling you not to move and you need to fight it. So instead of, you know, calling a coworker on the phone, you get up and walk over to their office. I kind of force myself to get in NEAT sometimes and like I'll leave. So I always carry a gallon jug of water with me, but I'll leave it in my car instead of taking it into my office. So I know that eventually at some point during the morning, I need to go back out to my car, get my water and come back in. It's just like small little changes, or I have 3 bathrooms in my house. And so if I were going to go to the bathroom after this podcast, instead of going to the one that's right outside my office, I'll go to the one that's in my bedroom, which is all the way across my house. It's just small little things here and there that add up daily. So, you know, on my way home, instead of checking the mailbox, I'll go home, get the mailbox key and walk to my mailbox. Just things like that. That's just little things that can add up and make a huge difference day to day.
Yeah. I will say that one way that I do the opposite. So over the course of like just working from home and when the pandemic hit, especially, I like to be really good about my water intake, especially earlier on in the day. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of clients who struggle really hard with water intake. And so mm-hmm. one thing that I started using as an example is one way that I'm actually really lazy about NEAT. And so this is one way that it could work in the opposite direction, not to be a bad example. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this, but I'm holding a shaker bottle in one hand. And then next to that shaker bottle, I keep a half gallon filled. And I literally keep both of these things on my desk so that I don't have to get up and refill my water bottle. I just open up the half gallon and I pour it in. And so if you want to work the other way with that, you can force yourself to keep getting up and refilling your water throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But I do, you know, there are little things that you can also do in the opposite direction. I guess if you're struggling with water intake and you need to have this next to you to be able to refill it and not skip out on it, you know, that's something that I personally am not willing to sacrifice. And like kind of making fun of myself for it, but like I'm not going to drink water if I don't have this half gallon next to me, because I just get so wrapped up in things that I won't get up to refill my water. And that's something I could definitely be better on. But for me, that's something that's not worth the trade-off, and I get my need in other ways. But I wanted to give that example because you can kind of flip that on its head and you can say, well, I'm going to increase my need by getting up every hour to fill up my water bottle. And, you know, there are things that maybe are inconvenient for you. And I guess this brings up a good point that, you know, you can get your need in multiple different ways. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do all of the things that we just suggested. So there are going to be certain things that are or are not worth the trade-off for you, depending on the nature of your work mm-hmm. and the nature of your lifestyle. Right. And then the final thing is just the analogy. I think I brought this up in another episode. But I think it's so funny because a lot of times when you see people on Instagram or if they're contest prepping, and I don't really do bedroom selfies, but you know, you see the competitor who they're going through contest prep, and over the course of their prep, their bathroom or bedroom selfies just get messier and messier and messier mm-hmm. in the background because they're not moving, they're not cleaning their stuff. So one way you can do that, and one way that I've found to be really productive with increasing my activity levels is chores and just mm-hmm. taking care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of in that aspect. So just cleaning the kitchen a little bit deeper than maybe you would have otherwise, or picking up the stuff from the floor in your bedroom so that your bedroom selfies do look nice and tidy or something like that is a good way to get in NEAT as well.
Yeah. So just like cleaning, maybe gardening, you know, just random things, random chores throughout the house, maybe even going grocery shopping instead of doing online ordering, just small little things. But the other thing that I think can be important too is it's kind of the same thing that you might experience around the idea of working out or getting in your cardio, that the longer you put it off, that kind of is a, like it looms over your head. So what I like to tell my clients is, because it's very easy to let your day or to let life kind of overcome and kind of get in the way of things. So I, again, when I was during quarantine and when I was working from home, I was able, I didn't have to be at work as early. So I was able to get up and go on a walk with my dog, and I was able to get in anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 steps to start my day. And it just made me feel very good, just to kind of clear my head, set my intentions for the day, maybe listen to a podcast. But also I knew, okay, I got out a lot of meat for the day. So it's not something I need to really worry about, because I know that whatever movement I do throughout the day is going to be what I need to hit. So I think it's just a good way to prioritize your movement, make sure you're getting that in, and it's not 8, 9 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, I need to go on a 30-minute walk, but it's dark out. I don't want to go to the gym. It's already cold. And you ended up, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow, and you put it off. So prioritizing your movement and starting your day off with movement can just be something that's just sets the tone for the rest of the day. So that's something that I like to implement with my clients, especially if they're like, well, I ended up working late, so I couldn't go to the gym, or because of that, I wasn't able to do my cardio at the end of my workout. So just if you're able to maybe get up a little bit earlier than normal, get in a little bit of movement, and then start your day.
Yeah. And that's huge too, because even me, and like, we're talking, sitting here talking to you guys as the quote unquote experts, right? But I'll literally get up and I'll work my whole day and I'll have 1,000 steps or 500 steps and I'll be kind of stressed out. I'm like, how am I supposed to get to 7,000 now? Like, mm-hmm. And like, you know, it kind of just looms over my head like, oh, well now I got to walk a little bit to wait to warm up for the, mm-hmm. for my workout. And I got to get on the treadmill a little bit after. And like, that's something that is unique to the winter months for me, because it's just, I can't go outside after lunch and go on a nice little walk because it's 30 degrees. But you know, that just comes with part of the lifestyle, right? If we are trying to set an example as living a healthy lifestyle and being active individuals, we have to practice what we preach. And sometimes that's going to take more discipline than not. And I find for me specifically, the winter months take a lot more discipline out of me than the summer months do, because absolutely. It's fun to be outside when it's warm. Mm-hmm. It's fun to go on a walk or do something when it's nice and sunny. And that's what I would do. I would go outside right after lunch and I would do a little digestion walk and I'd feel really good. But you know, it's really, really tough in the winter months. So, you know, I don't want you guys sitting here and saying, oh, well, they get their steps in every day because they're fitness influencers and they're perfect with everything they do. You know, it's really hard right now for me to stay consistent with just even a 7,000 step goal. And for some people, 10,000, 15,000 is normal. But for me, it's, you know, it's difficult to get up to that on most days.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So I think the other thing, we've kind of touched on this before, is how you can track your needs. So there are a lot of different ways and a lot of different products. So we have a lot of people who have Apple Watches and they will sync to your phone. Marissa has one on right now. I used to have a Fitbit, but it stopped working on me. So now I have a different one. It's not my favorite, but it kind of gets the job done. And there are some people who might, again, because I have clients who are very high stress individuals, and they will be like, well, which one is the most accurate? I don't really
None of them.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. But what matters is you're not, okay, well, today I'm going to wear my Apple Watch and tomorrow I'm going to wear my Fitbit. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to use my phone tracker. And then if you're constantly switching up the way you track your steps, and then that's when it becomes an issue. So whatever you, and that's not like, oh, well, I was using my Apple Watch, but that broke and now I'm using a Fitbit. Is that wrong? You're just trying to, again, establish that baseline. And so whatever you're using, just keep it constant. So it doesn't matter. You could use one and one, you know, you could walk the same amount of steps and one does maybe 5 steps more, or one is maybe 10 steps more. It doesn't really matter. It's just keeping it constant. One of the things that I get really frustrated with though, is my watch, and I know a lot of other watches, Apple might be a little bit different because you can set different modes and be like, hey, I'm biking and not walking anymore. But when I bike, I don't get in as many steps as I would when I'm on the treadmill. So that's really frustrating for me because I have a spin bike at home. And on days where it's really cold or I don't have time to go to the gym and I just want to sit on my spin bike and still kind of hang out with my husband and not leave and go to the gym to get steps in, I'll do that, but my steps are significantly lower. So even though you still might be getting in the same amount of activity, like 30 minutes versus walking versus 30 minutes of biking, just know that that can decrease, but it won't have a higher count for steps. Something that my mom and I always joke about, and we look like weirdos, but whenever I go through the grocery store or like I'm walking somewhere, you will see me pushing my cart with my right hand so my left arm can still swing and get my steps in. But at the end of the day, the activity is still the same whether your arm swings or not. I'm so used to it that there would be times where I have my left arm has to be like swinging at all times because I want to make sure that my steps are being accounted for. But like even like vacuuming, I try to do everything with the other hand so the other one's still moving. I feel like a weirdo sometimes, but it's just, you know, it's just something that I've been, I don't know the word for it. I'm really bad with my words today, but.
But it's fun, right? It's kind of fun to like hit your step goal. And like, if you're that type of personality, like I'm culprit of that shopping cart thing too, unfortunately. Yeah. but like, you know, if you like numbers and you like to hit goals like that and you thrive off of that, then that's okay, right? And so it's only problematic if it's something that actually degrades your own mental health or something along those lines. I did want to bring up there was a study that was being done at my university last spring. I don't know what the status on it is right now because I know they were collecting data like right before the pandemic hit. But one of my professors was doing a study with our gait analysis technology. So we have 3D gait analysis cameras. So you can basically record someone walking on a treadmill or running on a treadmill. And so what they did is they had participants come in, they would be filmed walking on the treadmill and they'd have you walk for a mile on the treadmill. And it'd be roughly, you know, like at a 20 minute mile pace. They'd put a fitness watch on you and they were testing the differences between the step count that was actually recorded, the step count on the watch, and the step counts between different types of watches. So I believe they measured with a Fitbit, a Garmin, and like one other. And I know they didn't do the Apple Watch, but I would be so curious to see how that would play into it. But they were essentially verifying the accuracy of the watch. And I don't know the exact outcomes of that study, but from the discussions that I had with some of the, because I was a participant in that study, the discussions I had with the people collecting the data was that it's just not really quite as accurate as we want it to be. It is can be a little bit above, can be a little bit below. Depends on the arm swing, depends on the sensitivity of the watch itself. So again, we're not taking these things as gospel. We're not taking the step count as this is exactly what I did today. Because if I wave my arms around right now, it'll tell me I got 5 steps.
Same thing with driving. Like I've noticed sometimes when I drive with my left hand, I'll be like, oh, well, I know I didn't just get up and walk around, but it's accounting for my arm moving.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's not going to be the 100% accurate, but it is important, like we said, to just get a general idea of what our movement looks like. And I think that should be the biggest takeaway that you get with that.
Right. And I think it's kind of the same thing when it comes to tracking your food, that whatever, because I'll get some people who say, should I track my rice cooked or uncooked? Should I do it raw or cook? How should I track it? And I'm like, whatever makes it easier for you and you are going to stick with on a consistent basis. And, you know, just track the same way. Because if you are, let's say you track your chicken cooked, okay? If you are eating 4 ounces for every single meal and you now want to manipulate it and move to 3.5, well, because you are doing it constantly every single time, you know that for a fact you are going to change your how much you consume because you've gone from 4 and you've gone from 3.5 and it's the same way every single time. But if one day you weigh it cooked and one day you do it raw and you're constantly, you may not be able to make an accurate change. So it's the same thing with your knee. If you do everything that you normally do, you're wearing the same band from day to day to day to day, whatever you do, it's going to be pretty much accurate for you. So it's not like the magic number is 5,000 steps and you have to hit 5,000 steps. It's just whatever your baseline is, and you can make changes from there.
Yeah, and that's a really good segue actually into our last point about, okay, well, what if tracking all these numbers is something that is not necessarily super healthy for you or your mental state, right? Mm-hmm. And that is essentially what it comes down to is, okay, well, you know, you can kind of quantify, oh, and this goes into the biking thing that you mentioned too. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go on a 30-minute walk every single day, then you should know roughly how many steps that accumulates for you, mm-hmm. right? And so if you do a 30-minute session on the treadmill, you know that's roughly 3,000 steps or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't actually know what it is, but let's say that's what it is.
Yeah, 3,000, 4,000.
Then, you know, if you're going to substitute that walking for biking the next day, then you can know that your steps can end that day about 3,000 steps lower, and you will be perfectly fine because your activity mm-hmm. was probably the same. And then same thing goes for, you know, if you are trying to stay away from the numbers and you are trying to remove those, you know, all the counting out of your life, then okay, take it by behavior. You know, if you commute to work every single day and you park, you have to park with the watch, you know, at the end of the parking lot, you know, to get your extra steps in getting into your office, then don't stop doing that if you take the watch off. You know, it's the same thing as like, if you're tracking food, oh, if I don't plug it in my FitnessPal, then it didn't count. It's not, mm-hmm. it's the same thing as that. If you take the watch off, the activity tracking doesn't stop. You know, you can still quantify, you know, okay, well, if I take a 15-minute walk after lunch every day and I'm going to the gym, that will roughly get me to a 7,000 step goal for the day. So if I stop using my watch, I should still do my 15-minute walk after lunch, and I should, you know, I should get to my steps by the end of the day after the gym. And then if I have a rest day, I should be mindful that if I'm not going to the gym, I should probably go on a little bit longer of a walk. And mm-hmm. like just knowing how those things trade off and work with tracking meat, it's very similar to going from tracking your macros to now kind of managing it, quote unquote, intuitively. Mm-hmm. You just know how these numbers work now well enough that you're able to do it without the numbers themselves.
Right. So I think it's kind of silly to think about intuitive eating and like intuitive exercise or intuitive meat. Like it's kind of funny because it's like, well, that's how we used to do things. Yep. You know, but now I feel like sometimes having all of this data and having all of these ways to track all these things that can lead us to becoming more obsessive with the numbers and trying to be 100% accurate and 100% on my food and nutrition and exercise every single day. And yeah, that can lead to people, especially high stress individuals, to become obsessed with numbers and to become obsessed with being perfect. But again, it's really about establishing that baseline and having a good idea of, okay, this is what I need to eat in order to maintain my weight. And okay, this is the amount of exercise I need to do to maintain my weight as well. And if I want to diet, or if I want to gain a little bit more strength, I might have to manipulate things here and there. But you can do so without tracking, especially if you're someone who does become obsessive with numbers. But I like to think of tracking things, whether it's macros or your exercise, as tools. And there are things that you can implement in order to reach specific goals. So when I prep, I have very, very, very specific goals, and I have to get to, you know, kind of extreme levels. So I do track my macros and I do track my exercise because I'm trying to account for every single variable there is. But for someone who's just living a healthy lifestyle, you don't need to be that obsessive. So it's just a good idea, track for a little bit, get a baseline, and then kind of keep things constant. And if, you know, one day you want to play tennis instead of go, you know, on a 30-minute walk, you can do that. You can substitute things. Fitness doesn't have to be a 30-minute walk every single day, or I have to, you know, do this every single day. It's doing things that you find fun and keep you active and just keep you on a healthy lifestyle.
I think that's such a good closing point because, you know, it's really just about being active. And when we talk about, I find it so interesting how we drew so many parallels between tracking our non-exercise activity and tracking our diets and how similar those things can really be. And so hopefully you guys took away principles not only for tracking your activity, but now also some bigger picture principles with your diet as well, and how those two things go hand in hand, how they interact, and how we can actually use NEAT or just learn how to keep it constant so that we are, you know, perpetuating a healthier lifestyle. And like Christina said, you know, it doesn't have to be a post-lunch 15-minute digestion walk. That's like not set in stone, because if you're going to go and play a sport on the weekend out in the sun, that's a great way to get more activity in. And we don't need to just have these things be so rigid. It's really about the principles of habits and a healthier, active lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome way to close out this episode. So we hope you enjoy this episode and that you guys learned a lot. So just a little recap. So we talked about your total daily energy expenditure and all the components that go into that. We talked about why NEAT is important, how much NEAT you should be getting, how to get in some more NEAT into your day is more better or not. Different kind of trackers and what to do if you become obsessed with numbers. So if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed to our podcast. We'd appreciate it if you could leave us a rating and review on iTunes and share this episode with a friend, maybe someone who you think would benefit or learn about NEAT. And you can find both of us on Instagram. You can find me at Chrissy Lynn Fit and Marissa at Marissa Roy Fitness. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're watching on our YouTube videos, hello.
Peace out.
But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. And we hope to see you back next week, next Tuesday.
Listening to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed and learned something from it. Please remember that Christina and I are not medical professionals, so if you're going to make any changes to your exercise or nutrition routines, please consult with your doctor or medical team first. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how the podcast moves up the ranks and supports our mission to become accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time here at the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast.